This is New Media Beat on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Stephanie O'Kenwa.
And I'm Kayla Sudato. This week we have media news.
From China.
Is China using social media to meddle in U.S. politics? Or is there Chinese propaganda on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? What does Meta say? What did Meta do about the Chinese influence campaign?
From Ethiopia and Eritrea.
How free are the media in Ethiopia and Eritrea? Is there an independent news media, or are government restrictions making reporting difficult? Did you know that there is a war in Ethiopia?
From North Korea.
How does the North Korean government restrict media access? Can North Koreans use mobile phones to access the internet? What can North Koreans do about these restrictions?
From China.
The government pays attention to the internet and social media. What about dating apps? Why are dating apps so popular in China? Is this about romance or politics?
From Iran.
The protests following the death of Mahsa Amini continue. How are the protesters and the government using the internet and social media in Iran? Can the government shut down the activists online?
From Kenya.
Can LGBTQ plus people see themselves in Kenya media? Or is the government restricting gay content? How does the government justify stopping LGBTQ plus content? Are gay people visible in the media?
From Mexico.
Are there drag artists on TV in Mexico? What about online? Have you heard about La Más Draga? Move over, RuPaul. La Más Draga is a YouTube sensation in Mexico. What will happen when RuPaul sends Drag Race Mexico across the border this year?
From Nicaragua.
Why is this Ortega regimen shutting down radio stations in Nicaragua? Are there any independent voices left on Nicaraguan radio? How important is radio in Nicaragua? How many stations were shut down this summer?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
The midterm elections are coming up. Our media is full of campaign ads and all sorts of extreme content on social media. Some of those messages on social media are not American. These are foreign influence campaigns. There were disinformation campaigns before elections in 2016 and in 2020. What about 2022? Which countries are trying to influence the outcomes of our elections? The Russians are a major source of disinformation, but it's not just Russia. China is very interested in the outcome of our elections. Joanna Vizicelli has a report about China targeting American voters with social media campaigns. Joanna, how was this discovered? Who figured out that some of these posts on social media were part of a Chinese disinformation campaign?
So Facebook, which is now known as Meta, discovered the accounts. They had systems that located them, as well as accounts targeting the Czech Republic. Similar accounts were also discovered on Twitter and Instagram. According to the New York Times, in November of 2021, these accounts began using profile pictures of men, but predominantly female names.
What content did China-based accounts post on Meta?
The China-based Meta accounts posted political content targeting the United States' elections. The accounts posed as both Democrats from Florida, Texas, and California, and United States Republicans. Debates about abortion and gun rights were raised in these posts, with views from both sides of the political spectrum. Reuters reported that one account commented on Florida Senator Marco Rubio's Facebook post. The comment targeted the debate on gun rights and used the hashtag, #RubioChildrenKiller.
What is Meta's response to China's based accounts and posts?
So Meta removed the accounts, and they also released an announcement in response to the accounts and the posts. They wrote that they found two covert influence operations from China and Russia. The operations allegedly violated Meta's policy against coordinated inauthentic behavior. Meta said that the network in China included four distinct and brief efforts to target specific audiences between the fall of 2021 and mid-September of 2022. Meta said that in the United States, the network targeted Democrats and Republicans, so the political sector of life, and in the Czech Republic, the network focused on the government's response to the war between Russia and Ukraine. In the announcement, Meta wrote, "Our automated systems took down a number of accounts and Facebook pages for various community standards violations, including impersonation and inauthenticity." Meta also wrote in the announcement that This was the first Chinese network we disrupted that focused on U.S. domestic politics ahead of the midterm elections, as well as Czechia's foreign policy towards China and Ukraine.
Wow, okay. So has China interfered with other nations' politics before, or is this a new trend?
So this is not a new trend. In recent years, China used social media to spread propaganda regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2021, Japan Forward said that China used a fake identity on Facebook, Wilson Edwards. He was supposedly a Swiss biologist. And the social media posts claim that the United States pressured the WHO to blame China for the pandemic. But the Swiss embassy responded on Twitter, telling the Chinese press and netizens to remove the post because Swiss Edwards was unknown. The identity was fraudulent. China also used social media to interfere with the United States policies and politics before. But there's a difference between what's happening now and what's happened in the past. In the past, Meta's global threat intelligence lead, Ben Nimmo, said that they focus on issues regarding China, but now these posts are containing issues within the United States.
Wow, very interesting. So why may China be involving itself in United States politics ahead of the 2022 midterm elections?
So it's possible that China may want to amplify the political divisions within the United States. World Population Review said that some experts argue that the United States is currently the world's only true superpower and highlighted that the United States has a very polarized and divided political climate, which leaves the country vulnerable. So the China-based accounts could specifically target United States politics in an attempt to replace the country as the global superpower, because once again, politics are currently the United States' weakness that could lead them to be a downfall as a superpower. And this can also be an attempt to engage in information warfare. So this is when one is protecting their own information, but at the same time trying to acquire or disrupt others' information. And the practice continues and evolves as technology advances as well. NATO recognizes information warfare. They called social media platforms a valuable source of information on the target groups to which disinformation activities are to be addressed. NATO characterizes fake accounts, bots, and misinformation as aspects of information warfare. They also said that troll factories exist. This is when there are entities that people post comments online from with a goal or agenda in mind. These posts are posted from fake profiles on social media, and this is exactly what we see happening in the China-based accounts that were discovered on Meta. Information warfare makes media consumers the victims who must identify and escape disinformation efforts. For New Media Beat, I'm Joanna Visicelli. Back to you, Kayla.
Thanks, Joanna. My co-host Stephanie Okenwa has a report about media restrictions in Ethiopia and its neighbor, Eritrea. Did you know that there was a bloody war going on in Ethiopia? The war in Ukraine attracts a lot more attention than this war in Africa. There are rebels in this northern Tigray region and Ethiopia who are fighting against the Ethiopian and Eritrean military. Stephanie, what can you tell us about the war and how it is affecting the media in Ethiopia? What is the war about? Is there press freedom in Ethiopia during this crisis? Can Ethiopian journalists and the foreign press cover this war?
Journalists are able to cover this war to some extent, but same as how the country is currently a war zone, it's harder to get information out without putting journalists in danger.
Is there a free and independent news media in Ethiopia and Eritrea?
There are only a handful of free media news outlets in Ethiopia, even less in Eritrea, since it's under control of both governments.
Interesting. So why don't we know more about the civil war in Ethiopia?
The government is trying to minimize the coverage in Ethiopia, like the amounts of losses they've suffered against the other side. They've done this in order to protect the country's interests.
Okay. What is the genocide occurring in Tigray, Ethiopia?
It's a civil war that's been going on since November 3rd, 2020, between the Ethiopian government, the Eritrean government, and the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Tensions from the Ethiopian civil war in 1991 have led to attacks of the federal parliament in Ethiopia. The TPLF has been labeled a terrorist group by both governments, and there have been reports on both sides of people being abducted, assaulted, mutilated, and raped. All news outlets are state-owned in Eritrea. Journalists have been imprisoned without trial or charge. This is especially true because barely 2% of the Eritrean population has access to the internet. Mainly the upper class. From New Media Beat, I'm Stephanie Okenla. Back to you, Kayla.
Thank you, Stephanie. Can North Korean citizens use mobile phones to access the internet? Do North Koreans have smartphones? How does the government restrict mobile phone and internet access?
North Korea has a long history of government censorship. There is no free and independent media in Kim Jong-un's Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Is there internet? Do North Koreans have smartphones? What about apps? Alyssa Quinitrini is going to tell us what it's like to be a North Korean under the surveillance of the government. How did this censorship begin?
The censorship began when the North Korean government wanted to monitor what was being released on the media and what was being seen by the citizens. This censorship includes being strictly against the use of phones and media, and according to writer Steven Silver, there is even no access to Apple or Google app stores.
How is the government controlling access to the media and the internet? Is their device use as free as we think? As free as we would think?
In North Korea, citizens are allowed to own their own cell phones, but there is a catch. According to Stephen Johnson from Freethink.com, the only owned smartphones that North Korean citizens are allowed to have are devices that are made with governmental-made software. This type of software has the extent to see and monitor any authorized or unauthorized media or information that may be used.
How do citizens get around these governmental smartphone controls?
Reports found by Josh Smith has said that North Korean citizens do not really have the technological ability to, you know, get around these restrictions because with the phones being monitored, the government and the software are built to have the ability to censor and screenshot phone screens if forbidden media is accessed.
What happens if North Korean citizens are caught accessing forbidden media?
As we know, North Korean citizens are strictly stopped from viewing media that is highly prohibited in their country. Stephen Johnson from Freethink.com reports that if North Korean citizens disobey and go around these restrictions, they unfortunately can and may face severe consequences. Is this an invasion of privacy? Will North Korean citizens let this be? Reporting for New Media Beat, I am Alyssa Quattrini. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Alyssa. Across the border from North Korea is China. China is an authoritarian government that controls the internet and social media. But at least there is an internet and social media, and millions of smartphones in China. Yes, there is censorship, and most foreign apps are blocked. But China has a vibrant online world of Chinese social media platforms and apps. One area that the government has opened up is the world of dating apps. Why are dating apps permitted and even promoted? Why has the government of China been so supportive of dating apps? How open and free are these dating apps of China? Do you have to look over your shoulder for Big Brother when you swipe right in China? Do citizens swipe right and left on Chinese dating apps? Ananda Hogarth Shannon has been doing the research. Ananda, how many dating apps are there in China? Are these dating apps the same ones that are popular in the U.S.? Do they have Tinder, Bumble, and Grindr in Beijing?
Well, to answer your first question, they actually have 275 dating apps now, and in 2017, they just had 81. They do not have access to Tinder, Bumble, and Grindr in Beijing because Western media and Western apps are blocked by the Chinese government. So they have their own versions. They have Momo and Tantan, but they have since merged, sent through my report. They have Baiju, Ching Chi Fan, and Mashu, just to name a few.
What are they being used for?
They are being used for not dating, but to socialize and make friends. Since over the pandemic, no one was able to go outside since the Chinese government's COVID restrictions were so strict. And since then, they've implemented a zero COVID policy where in the neighborhood, if one person tests positive, the entire neighborhood gets shut down for 2 weeks. So with these dating apps, people are able to socialize with other people and actually make friends because they're spending more time on the internet, online, gaming, and there's only so many times you could read the same book and not get bored and go insane.
Why is the resurgence of dating apps so important?
The resurgence of dating apps is so important because formerly the government actually shut down the use of these dating apps because they were scared about not only the spread of pornographic content, but also the fear that the people would get political on these dating apps. So they've asked companies since then to grant the government access to monitor them and, you know, content watch to make sure people aren't getting political and being anti-Chinese government.
What does this mean for the future?
What does it mean for the future? It means that the people are just going to start getting back to a sense of normalcy in terms of the government monitoring them. That's not changing. But what I do see in the future is, you know, them actually forming lasting relationships with one another. Not relationships, but relationships, friendships. For New Media Beat, I'm Ananda Hogarth-Shannon. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Ananda. The protests in Iran continue. How are the protesters using social media to demand change in Iran? How is the government restricting the internet and stopping activists from using social media?
There has been a lot of anger in Iran since a young woman, Mahsa Amini, has been killed on September 16th after being arrested for the morality police for not wearing her hijab correctly. The demonstrations continue. The government already had strict rules about media and the internet. How has the government's control of media changed during the unrest? Can Iranian citizens use the internet and social media to express their outrage? What is the government doing to stop them? What can activists do to get around the government's restrictions on the internet and social media? Emma Kutis and Kasmin Drewsbury are here to have a conversation about the government, the protests, the internet, and social media in Iran since the killing of Mahsa Amini.
On September 13th, 2022, Iran's morality police arrested Mahsa Amini, a 22-year-old woman, resulting in protests. In public, women are required to cover their hair according to strict rules.
Why is the Iranian government controlling the internet and social media?
The Iranian government has been trying to control the internet and social media due to recent protests and unrest in the country. Several websites are blocked and internet services has been shut down by Iranian authorities.
Okay. Mr. Drewsbury, how long has the Iranian government been censoring and controlling outside media content?
Since the early 2000s, Iran has been working on a project for content filtering and social media restrictive purposes. This sophisticated yet broad project is called the National Information Network. This requires all companies to use Iranian data centers and forces citizens to register for internet use with their social and phone numbers.
How do Iranian leaders justify censorship and control of the internet?
Well, Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei believes that internet is the enemy's method to distort and destroy the Islamic values in Iran. And what they mean by enemies is Western powers such as the U.S. This led Khamenei to creating groups like the National Information Network and the Supreme Council of Cyberspace to further regulate these internet spaces.
Okay, so protests. Who is Mahsa Amini and what happened to her, Emma?
Mahsa Amini was arrested by police for not wearing her headscarf correctly. She then died 3 days later from a severe head injury after being arrested. In Iran, it is believed that the morality of police punish women according to standards, which has been a problem for decades.
What is the role of social media in Iran since the death of Mahsa Amini?
Within a day of the incident, Iranians took Mahsa's story to their Instagrams to share what had happened to her. The news had quickly spread across Twitter. A hashtag with her name had millions of tweets, likes, shares, and other actions around the world.
So, how are human rights activists and Iranian activists reacting to this problem?
These advocates emphasize that the global community contribute to the solution of the major problems Iran is facing by raising awareness through social media.
So, Kasim, has there been any recent occurrences of censorship?
Well, due to the death of Mahsa Amini and the protests that broke out in response, the Iranian government has shut down the internet on multiple occasions to stop the spreading of what's happening in Iran on the streets. these shutdowns have limited protesters to their access to social media, where they mainly distribute that information.
For Noon Media Beat, I'm Emma Koutsis.
And I'm Cassian Jewsbury. Back to you, Kayla.
Thanks. There is a lot of controversy about the LGBTQ media in many European countries like Russia and Hungary. But LGBTQ plus media content is not welcomed in some African nations as well. Gay rights are human rights, and it is a global struggle.
My co-host, Kayla Sododo, is ready with a report about LGBTQ plus media in Kenya. There is a debate in Kenya about allowing LGBTQ plus content in the media. Kayla, what is the first news story that drew you to this topic?
Hi, Stephanie. So I did a lot of research on the Kenyan media in general because I was very unfamiliar with it. I came across a lot of different stories, but there was one film in particular that I want to talk about. So back in 2020, there was a Kenyan man who produced a film called I Am Samuel. It was ultimately about like a Kenyan man trying to thrive in this new unexplored world of same-sex marriage and actions and so on, and all about the LGBTQ plus community, and basically him trying to thrive in this new world and dealing with old school traditional parents who are disapproving of the gay lifestyle, basically. And after he was vulnerable to put it out, the film was quickly taken down. Samuel was not only gay, but he was human. He was religious, he was bright, he was someone who was coming in terms with his sexuality. So for the country to immediately ban and take down your film, that must be a lot to take in for an individual.
When did Kenya start banning LGBTQ plus content?
So Kenya is known for the last couple of years to be homophobic. And something I don't fully understand is, so Kenya is in East Africa, so same-sex marriage is banned there. But in South Africa, the same-sex marriage is acceptable and it's okay. But back in 2010 is when Kenya made it unconstitutional to have same-sex marriage, along with like it being just prohibited.
What would happen if someone dared to go up against the current LGBTQ plus laws in Kenya?
There would be a lot of issues. There would be a lot of uproar. You would stand a chance of extreme jail time, at least 10 to 14 years, just for performing a same-sex act, let alone distribute a film with same-sex activities in it. You're looked down upon. You're going to get abused daily, physically, emotionally, by your Kenyan peers, and it's quite disturbing.
Why is Kenya still currently prohibiting all Kenyans from showing any type of same-sex film?
Kenya is not the first country or like state that would not condone LGBTQ plus content. There's this board called the KFCB. It stands for the Kenya Film Classification Board. And this board are the ones, the people, who are making this equal content now illegal. Some say the content may be offensive for the viewers, and they need to change some laws. For New Media Beat, I'm Kayla Sedato. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thanks, Kayla. Let's talk about Mexico and drag media in Mexico. Is there a thriving drag scene in Mexico City? Are there drag shows on Mexican TV? Where do you find drag culture online? Jada Turner is our New Media Beat reporter looking into drag culture and media in Mexico. Jada, tell us about La Más Draga. Is this a TV show like RuPaul's Drag Race? Where can we watch this show?
So, La Más Draga is a Mexican reality competition. It's available for streaming on YouTube. And La Más Draga displays different drag queens who compete by performing different acts and challenges weekly. Slowly over the years, Mexico has become more and more open to the LGBT community through drag racing and portraying exposure throughout several media outlets and online, such as YouTube. But due to this new wave of drag culture in Mexico, RuPaul's Drag Race producers have announced new international spin-offs in many countries, including Mexico.
How do people in Mexico feel about drag being popularized?
Well, not everyone is accepting. However, many people are enjoying it and attend shows and even stream La Maestraga, while others treat performers unfairly due to homophobia.
With the embrace of the LGBTQ community, how has this helped with discrimination?
I think with drag being entertaining, I'd say it's had a positive effect by opening eyes and shedding more light on the culture, so people are becoming more acceptable.
How do performers feel about the shift of drag being more acceptable?
Well, many people are still getting used to it being normal since it's such a new wave. Lady Alpha, a Mexican drag performer, she stated that it helped improve her style, projection, and growth while performing. For New Media Beat, I'm Jada Turner. Back to you.
Thanks, Jada. Anthony Moyet is on the Nicaraguan Media Beat for us. This week, Anthony is here to talk about Radio Nicaragua. The government has been shutting down many stations this summer. There are lots of questions to ask. Why is radio so important in Nicaragua? Can't Nicaraguans get their news online? Is radio more important than internet for news in Nicaragua? Anthony, let's start with the latest news. What's happening to the radio stations in Nicaragua?
Radio listenership is large in Nicaragua, and several radio stations have faced problems of the dictatorship being shut down or demolished for opposing the regime. Influential radio broadcasters such as Radio Dario, Radio Sky, Radio San Carlos have been affected. At least 17 stations have had their licenses revoked in Nicaragua in just the past 2 months, and more than 130 journalists have fled into exile, most heading to Costa Rica. The best way to understand this is to look at one example of a radio station that got into trouble with the government, Radio Dario.
What is the history of Radio Dario?
Founded more than 70 years ago, Radio Dario is the latest news outlet to be forced out of Nicaragua because of what rights groups and journalists described as political pressure from President Daniel Ortega and his administration. In order to understand why Radio Dario got into trouble with the government, we really need to talk about the longtime owner of Radio Dario, Anabel Toruno. Anabel Toruno is the director and owner of Radio Dario and is one of the oldest and last remaining independent radio broadcasters in Nicaragua.
What is happening to Radio Dario right now under the Ortega regime?
So, in 2018, the broadcaster's offices were attacked and lit on fire with approximately a dozen people inside. Luckily, the staff managed to escape, but the malicious attacks destroyed their studios. Radio Dario has clearly come into conflict with the government with these attacks, and this attack shows how it's not just about licenses being revoked, but actual violence. Many other radio stations have had licenses revoked in Nicaragua in the past 2 months as well. At this point in time, independent radio stations and journalists across Nicaragua are being attacked or threatened over their news coverage. For New Media Beat, I'm Anthony Moyet.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our producer, Michael Green and Jacob Friedenberg, our engineer. Many thanks to my co-host, Kayla Sedoto.
Thanks, Stephanie. Today we heard reports from Anada Hagar-Shannon, Kasim Jewsbury, Emma Kustin, Anthony Moyet, Stephanie Okenwa, Alyssa Quattrini, Kayla Sedoto, Jada Turner, and Joanna Vizicelli.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep updated with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN. Thank you.